Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. Welcome to May's Roundtable from the Radio Today programme. We're back in Jazz FM with thanks for their hospitality, and we're ready to talk about why the BBC is making content as podcasts before they become programmes, why voice-activated assistants are making such an impact in American homes, how to get the best recording quality on your podcast, and whether newspaper reviews, standard fare on British radio, should acknowledge what's breaking on social media. And of course, in What Have We Been Listening To, I can promise you some great clips.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First of all then, let's meet the panel.
Hello, I'm Gloria Abramoff. I'm the Managing Director of Tonic Productions. We're an independent production company. We make radio documentaries, factual and current affairs, and we do film and TV for charities and corporates.
I'm Jonathan Wall, controller of Five Live, sometimes commissioned programmes from the aforementioned Gloria. So I run Five Live and Five Live Sports Extra. I've come down from sunny Salford to see you all today. That's where we've been based since 2011. I've been doing the job since 2013.
And I'm Dave Walters. I'm head of product systems and services for BBC TV, radio and archives, design and engineering. It's a long name. We kind of look after the studios and the workflow systems that our production teams use, from generating ideas all the way through to creating them and getting them ready for publication or broadcast.
Okay, welcome all. Let's start, if we may, with something that I heard this morning on the radio. On Radio 4's legendary Heritage Today programme, which was partly coming from the Twitter HQ, they did their normal newspaper review, but instead of just concentrating on newspapers, they talked about what was trending on Facebook, what was in Twitter, what was on BuzzFeed, what was in YouTube. And it suddenly sounded like Radio 4 had got all modern on us. I don't know whether any of you heard it, but it just made me think about newspaper reviews, an absolute staple of UK radio, and why we don't talk more about what's happening online. Jono, is that what I can come to you about?
Yeah. Well, I think if the President of the United States is going to communicate via Twitter, I suggest that it's clearly going to be part of the journalism. I think... social media and the way it's used in our business is fascinating. I would suggest on a breaking news story, Twitter, for example, is extremely vital for the first 5 minutes and then extremely dangerous after that in terms of what's fact and what's fiction. But I think our whole approach to this election campaign is you have to really get a feel of what people are thinking and doing. Where are people behaving on that? Sometimes it's Facebook, sometimes it's Twitter. So you have to soak it up, otherwise you're not really gleaning a barometer of the UK.
And so, would you think about including what's trending on Facebook or what is being covered BuzzFeed within a sort of newspaper review format?
We did the same last night. We have a review at 6 o'clock each night of the election running, and again, there's a dedicated journalist having a look at what's around, where other lines are underpinning the story.
Is this Sarah Sands' influence?
Well, I was wondering
Is it her first or second week? But I would assume that Sarah Sands has come in and said, we've got to raise the bar, we've just got to become a lot more contemporary, we've got to appeal to a younger audience. I heard it this morning, and I just thought, as I do with contemporary media, that they sounded a bit uncomfortable. The male presenter, why can't I remember his name?
Justin
Webb. There were just a few off-the-cuff remarks that he made that were really quite dated.
But that's a Today programme thing, isn't it? That's the John Humphreys. Exactly do we mean by a
T-shirt? But I'm just a little bit bored by that because social media isn't new and modern. It is what it is. It's part of our everyday life now. And they sound dated. So, and it's not even funny when they go, I don't know these new things.
Well, like David Imbleby saying hashtag QT.
Yeah, but they should know these things. They should know these things.
Dave, in your experience coming from the engineering side, do you think presenters and producers get it?
We're veering dangerously towards editorial here, and I'm an engineer, so what I can tell you is that Twitter has excellent broadband facilities, and the entire programme was brought to you today via the internet, so which is great, because on the editorial front, it allows us to go to places that we couldn't easily just pop into without getting sat trucks or links in in advance, so it brings new editorial propositions to the audience quicker.
I want to talk about the general election and not the politics of it, but the way that we in radio are covering it. But just while we're on the subject of engineering, Dave, a lot of people who listen to this podcast make podcasts. Some may argue that actually everyone who listens to this makes one. I've just recently come across Zencastr, and I also use IPDTL. There are other things. You know, from your perspective, when people in radio stations, you know, like Jono, want to make contact with people, it's become kind of the thing now that you say, well, phone quality's rubbish, so we've got to use something else, and it's got to be IP-based, so it's probably going to be Skype, but that keeps dropping out. What's the advice now?
I think there's three things when you're trying to do a down the line on the internet, for want of a better phrase. So the first is help yourself by helping the internet. So if you're doing it from home and you've got the kids who are streaming YouTube or iPlayer or they're on their Xbox, get them to stop. So give your local internet a chance to work. So don't fill it up with other stuff. If you're using a PC or a laptop to do that session on, give it some help. So don't be doing a massive Pro Tools session in the background. Just let it do one thing, which is the down the line thing. And then I think one of the things that we often forget about in that quest for quality is actually have a good quality microphone. Be close to it and listen to what you're doing on headphones, because that makes a huge difference to how the sound works and how professional it sounds at the other end. And try not to do it in your bathroom. So we all sit in studios on a day-to-day basis. They've all got acoustic treatment, so we sound nice and dead and nice and clear. If you're at home, you're sat in front of your massive patio doors in your kitchen, you're going to get all those reflections and it's going to sound echoey. So three things you can do there to help yourself.
Jono, are you conscious as a controller of a network that more lines go down now than used to? And is that possibly because we're actually just more ambitious?
Definitely. We've always had a bit of that on a 5% scripted maximum kind of radio station. But yeah, it's probably nothing more frustrating, is there, as a listener as well. So the more improvement in that area, the better, really, in terms of sort of stability of around broadband and stuff.
And are you happy with, you know, your shows using Skype, or do you try and get them to use IPDTL? I mean, I'm just interested from a kind of geeky point of view.
I mean, you're both in danger of out-geeking me on it. I think, I am happy with that. There's different levels of quality, aren't there? They start with a very, very poor mobile phone line on a phone-in. And obviously what you want to get is as close to a normal studio sound as you can in whatever form that is, really.
But as a member of the audience, I think it's sounding so much better than what it used to be like. So, yes, I know that there are still challenges, but it's certainly much crisper, particularly as we've got wall-to-wall phone-ins, where 20 years ago that would have been torturous, whereas now I just think it's much clearer.
Is it necessary any longer for a presenter to say, and he's on the line now, or she joins me on the phone now, or those things that you still hear being said, are they just redundant now as words?
Well, what a good question.
I think it's about the editorial confidence, right? So I think if you had a guest in the studio, you wouldn't expect their mic to stop or their mixer to break down. And that's what we perceive day-to-day radio to be, is incredibly reliable. Where we have guests that are far away, be it on the phone, sat links, internet, whatever, there is always that level of risk that for some reason it might just not work. So whether you need to caveat that in advance just to set that up, I don't know. I think that's a fair thing. And there are different tools for different jobs. So if you're doing pre-recorded content where you're going to produce it later and then eventually publish or broadcast it, some of the podcasting tools, some that you mentioned earlier, do a thing where they record locally. So the far away end, as well as having that live conversation, will record a copy of the file and then email or FTP it into the radio station, where the uber high quality, and if there were any dropouts, they disappear, can be reassembled later. But for some things where you just want to do it live, then some of the cheap and cheerful tools are really quite effective.
And the level of creative ambition is radically changed. I mean, I think we're probably going to do about 40 outside broadcasts over the next month. And I don't think we'd have been able to do that. I mean, I remember a Sydney Olympic Games in 2000 compared to a London 2012. And London was presented from inside stadia, outside stadia, every single aspect of the colour and painting of picture could be done in London that technically we weren't able to do in Sydney. We were stuck on ISDN lines in certain positions. So it's quite fascinating that this almost new wave of producers sort of, they don't think about the technical barriers that perhaps that I did 20 years ago.
Do we think the age of the audience receiving the content care more? So would you generalise and go, the older demographic expect this reliability, the younger demographic, yeah, they're OK if things break, they're on the internet all day long, they know how it works.
This is the Radio Today programme. It's our seventh round table. We're delighted to be joined by Gloria Abramoff, independent producer, Jono Wall from Radio 5 Live, and Dave Walters from the engineering side of BBC Radio. Let's talk about the British Podcast Awards. I went. I don't think the rest of you were there, but it got a lot of coverage, didn't it? And it was talked about on 5 Live. It was talked about on Radio 4. It was covered in lots of newspapers. And I think it made a lot of people who were perhaps sceptical think, do you know what, there's something in this podcast lark. Glo, what do you think?
Well, I didn't go. I wasn't invited, thank you, but yeah, I didn't go. But I did listen to the ones
to make
that
some
won.
It's all right, I'll cut that out. she wants it in, she's here for controversy.
But I listened to the winners this week and I like the cinemile. I listened
this is
to
the two guys who go and watch a movie and then they walk
couple,
home and chat about it for a while. Yeah.
And first of all, she's got a lovely Irish accent, which is just gorgeous. And they were reviewing The Jungle Book, and that was just really nice.
Right, we're just out of The Jungle Book by Jon Favreau. What do you think?
I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Really sweet and fun and looked amazing, and I cried and I love the music.
I cried twice.
Wish there was more music. And love Mowgli. He's kind of annoying, but I think that's representative of a typical 8-year-old boy would be a little bit annoying.
There was a few times where Mowgli, I remembered that he was a kid actor delivering lines. Some of his delivery was a little bit like this kid in The Phantom Menace, who you probably wouldn't remember.
No, I don't.
But Anakin's friend, it was a little bit like that. I just expected him to say, "Wizard Annie," at any moment. But to be fair, he was really good.
He acted in front of CGI, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he read with the actors. I think he read lines with them, so he was acting with people, but he was essentially running around by himself.
Dave, what have you been hearing on the podcast?
So I'm surprisingly old school. So I really enjoy Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast because it just makes me laugh. I tend to listen to Today in Parliament when we have one. There have been more parliaments recently, fewer parliamentary time. And the other thing I really like is from our own correspondent. But I think it supports what you're saying, Gloria. It's about the quality of storytelling.
Yeah.
And storytelling is a skill that the human race has had for 20,000 years, and it started around the campfire and went from village to village. The podcast world is a new way of people telling stories to either the same or new audiences. So it's a new outlet, but it really showcases great skill.
Isn't one of the things that's different that it's a way of telling stories that we have moved away from in the past 25, 30 years because we've become obsessed by access? As soon as we could take phone calls on the air, our ability to reach audiences by saying, look how many people are ringing up, or later on, look how many people are texting. And with a podcast, you don't do that. You just say, here I am, and I may be just talking to one person, and it's all very intimate, and if you like it, you like it, and you can listen. But it redefines that kind of engagement.
And yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that. Okay. I think that
that's what I'm here for.
I think what it is it totally fits the way people are now behaving. And it doesn't mean that there's not a place for amazing coming together live radio, music or speech. I think this is, we've been complacent at it. I mean, not now. We're on a bit of a mission at the minute. But I until I really saw the stats carefully, at under 30-year-olds in this space, we didn't do enough in it. And as you know, when we want to do something, we decide to go at it, in our case. And we've launched, I think, 10 podcasts in 2 months, deliberately aimed at 25 to 40-year-olds in this space who may or may not come in to listen to our live channel.
And these are podcasts you're making for
podcast
online only?
Podcast first. Virtually everything eventually will appear on air.
Okay, so something podcast first. Mention what some of them are.
So I'll mention, Flintoff, Savage and the Ping Pong Guy, currently number one in the sports charts. Round about 55,000 downloads per episode at the minute. Another 25,000 coming in through BBC Sport website. So it's not bad in 10 weeks to get to an 80,000 per week. And the thing is, that's a kind of quality 80,000, isn't it? It's people that are pressing a button to choose something. It's not just something on in the background.
you know, did you have a low point, the lowest of the low points, and that who helped you get out of the?
Do you know what? If you look at my career, I never found that consistency. I was never a consistent player, and I think as a person, I've never been particularly consistent. I've always had their massive highs and massive lows. So, do you know one of the things I found was when I was playing and did well and we won, I'd celebrate hard, and then the next day, I'd be like, right, is that it? I never enjoyed it as much as everyone else. I didn't like the attention. And then I'd steadily or quite sharply drop back down to rock bottom. And
rock bottom is where? Where's rock bottom?
Rock bottom is you can't get out of bed, you can't get off your couch, you can't hold a conversation with someone, you can't look people in the eye. I'll be sat at home, and it happens every now and then now where I'll be sat there and everything's going on around me in the house. There'll be people around and people talking, and I don't even know what's going on. I can't get a thought in my head. I want to desperately get involved in a chat with someone, but I can't. I move my mouth and nothing comes out. It's
something we're quite excited about, a real departure for us, probably inspired by the serial-esque type programming, but we've got our own American crime story podcast that Mark Sandell from Wise Brothers makings for us, which is called Beyond Reasonable Doubt, that we're launching next month. And it's a real play for us, based on a story that's been running in America for 20 years that brings interesting cases around the legal stories over there. But, you know, I don't want to be in a position 4 years' time where you two, Gloria and Trevor, as old friends, are tapping me on the shoulder saying, you've had your time, what have you done in it? I'm kind of looking at those stats of the podcast and thinking, we need to have a crack at this.
Can I just ask you, though, because I listened to Emma Barnett's podcast, you know, with
Eye of the Storm.
Yeah, Eye of the Storm. Yeah. And there were a couple which I thought were lovely.
Yeah.
The woman who was around, you know, the Rigby...
Lee Rigby. Right. And the eyewitness who was there.
Yes, and it was lovely. And what happened to her subsequently. I also listened to Colin Murray in Gary Lineker's home.
Yeah.
Which, again, I thought was lovely. What I was thinking, though, was why can't they just be on Five Live to start with? What's different about those that makes them podcasts? I know eventually they'll probably go on Five Live.
Yeah, and most of that stuff will. I suppose there's a different range of stuff, aren't there? I genuinely, with the Flintoff and Savage one, if we'd have started thinking on air first, we'd have not got to a kind of edgy, honest conversation between those three individuals. There is no sports debate programme like that. If anyone's interested in the mental health issues at the moment, Mental Health Week, the best 25 minutes you can hear is the Flintoff Savage and Matthew Sykes.
Right. It's
unbelievable.
Fabulous.
It's because we let them get on with something.
But why? Why is the question? You know, why is it that as soon as we come into a live radio studio, we don't behave in that fashion?
Bosses like me have been too complacent at some of this stuff, Trevor. Maybe we've had to say, you know, look at this new technology, look at this audience that's in this space. Let's be a little bit more edgy, radical with what we're doing. And effectively, Robbie and Freddie are co-producers of that show. The only fallouts we have are if I'm trying to take something out and they're like, no, that shouldn't come out. And I go, okay, it's your show, which stays in.
Sport is one of those areas, I would say, where podcasting really comes into its own because more opinion is expressed. You know, you could obviously the Arsenal podcast or the West Brom podcast or whatever it is going to be different from the kind of central line that you guys have got to tread on Five Live. But a lot of sports coverage is beginning, to my ears, to sound painfully old-fashioned because it's not like that podcast that you're now doing.
Yeah, I don't... Well, you might have to give me examples of what you think old-fashioned is because I think there's place for different strategies here, isn't there? If we're making a boxing podcast, OK, that can be quite an in-programme for those people that love that. And in a way, if you're delivering that sport for on-air to a 1 million audience, you can't quite be as niche in the in-jokes that, you know, that 50,000 people are getting there. Boxing might deliver a big commentary for on-air, which, by the way, was our biggest ever online listening, the big fight. But meanwhile, the niche magazine show delivers a much smaller audience, but they love it. And that's the thing. It's not just people who quite like something. If you read the reviews of the pods, that's what's fascinating. It's people who are absolutely waiting for it to come into their inbox and then listen to it.
Although I do like what you said about it might actually have an impact on your decisions about Five Live's schedules and Five Live's content.
Sure.
So what you learn from podcasts and the energy that podcasts and the sort of slight edginess that podcasts can allow you to be, you could actually bring some of that perhaps to Five Live.
And I think that's a fair challenge. Yeah. The only thing I'd say about that, obviously, is one of the main assets of the live channel is its liveness.
Yes.
And in a way, to really explore that storytelling that David also talked about there, they're almost different qualities. So in a way, we're trying to highlight one quality in the podcast world a bit more.
Yeah, I think you offer something different. Because you are live during, you know, you're live most of the time, so you're offering something different. I'm not quite sure what Radio 4 is offering that's different in terms of their podcast.
When Gwyneth comes on, we'll put that question to her.
That's harsh, Trevor. Let me just say, there are the top 200 in the iTunes charts. Radio 4 has 30 of them. And of which I think at least five or six are new, interesting.
Moving swiftly on. It's the Radio Today programme Roundtable. I'm Trevor Dan. Dave Walters is here, and John O'Wall, and also Gloria Abramoff. The general election. Now, we can't talk about the politics of it, but what are we doing on radio to counter voter fatigue? Is there anything we're listening to on the radio that's making us think, oh, this is good? Or are we hearing, like I heard a trail yesterday that said, don't forget to join me for our general election special tonight. I thought, those are just such killer words.
And now the weather.
Yeah. Dave?
I think the broadcast media have a whole bunch of regulation around it where we are bound to be fair, impartial and truthful. And I think one of the challenges we find ourselves in the wider world of social media and echo chambers and new facts, false facts, whatever they are, is whether it's refreshing or not, it's correct. And that's a good starting point, and that's got to be a good starting point for democracy.
But does it make some of the coverage a bit dull? And frankly, samey, when you've had the referendum last year and the election the year before. So, are we getting a bit bored with it?
So you could totally say that, but you could totally say that all of the new style of coverage is wrong. And maybe we need to fix the wrong before we go whether it's dull or not.
I want good quality debate. I want to be challenged. I want the broadcasters to challenge our politicians. I know that we're trying very hard to be funny and witty. I think Eddie Mair in PM is trying, you know, very hard to have a sort of slightly humorous edge on it. The point is, this is a very serious election and it needs serious debate. So I'm not looking for wacky, I'm looking for seriousness.
What do you make of those apparently endless programmes that start, today we've come to the West Midlands town of Walsall to find out what ordinary Walsonians think?
Well, you could be cynical. And
I think I just was. I'm so sorry. Let's go to John, because you make those kind of shows.
Oh, not with an opening like that, we don't.
I don't think that's particularly fair. I think you do need
anyway.
Listen to local radio. I mean, you'll get a lot of coverage on local radio, which is what they should be doing. They should be doing it. This is a democracy. This is important that we have those conversations. Sorry, Jono.
Radio's got a big role to play. Mm. Look at the numbers of the Today programme. Younger listeners voting for the first time, Radio 1's news bulletins, Radio 2's news bulletins. It's pretty crucial in a kind of democracy that there's 30-odd million people listening just to the BBC's output, let alone the brilliant work that commercial radio do. One of the first big news moments of the election was LBC with Diane Abbott, so well done them. They've been really ambitious with the guests that they put on phone-ins. We're taking a battle bus around the country. I can announce here we're taking a Five Live bus for 2 weeks. Colin Murray's on it for a week, so yes, we're going
to
learn from
some
of the edge of our podcast. We're going to make things happen. I don't think we are going to Walsall. I think we've got a west route 1 week and an east route the other, and I think we're missing out Walsall.
Is it the old leave?
Trevor can get to Walsall.
Is it the old leave bus? Have you repainted the £350 million
out? No, but we've definitely got Five Live branding all over it, that's for sure.
We do need to hear those voices. Sorry to interrupt. We do need to hear those voices because we didn't hear enough of those voices pre the European election. And I think we have to learn from our mistakes as broadcasters. And there were several mistakes. And I know your Walsall thing was just a metaphor for and I understand that. But we absolutely need to get out of London. Absolutely. And I know that you're, you know, Jono, I know that it's really important.
Trevor, there's one news team that weren't shocked by Brexit on the morning of, and they were sat in Salford.
Yeah.
And they're working for my radio station, and they've been and they'd been listening to the audience in that last three days, and they were not shocked by what was happening.
It's the echo chamber thing, isn't it? You know, we all live in social media to a certain degree, and you completely find yourself in environments where people are agreeing with you, and you're all going, but we all believe this. How can something else happen? Mm. And radio in Walsall brings back that thing where other people actually have opinions that might be different to yours.
Thank you, Dave. It's the Radio Today Roundtable. I'm Trevor Dan. You are listening to Dave Walters and John O'Wall and Gloria Abramoff and Gloria's pen, and occasionally Gloria's rings, which are making that noise, which is very attractive.
Sorry.
And thanks to Jazz FM for having us. And perhaps next time we could have a little piece of carpet in front of Gloria's desk. Just one thing before we get on to what we've been listening to, that caught my eye, Fred Jacobs and his tech survey in America. Some people don't necessarily think that much of what he says is interesting, but I was taken by a couple of things that his latest survey points out. One is that the two biggest reasons people stop listening to radio stations is, one, the repetitiveness of the ads, and two, the repetitiveness of the music, which are, as he says in an interview I heard on the Radio Stuff podcast, self-inflicted wounds. But the other thing is that penetration and use by radio listeners of those things we're now to call voice-activated assistants, in other words, Alexa and Google and all the rest of them, has gone from naught to nearly 11%. That means that's a lot of new people who are not switching on their radio but saying, hey, Alexa, play me Radio 5 Live or whatever it is. Yeah. These are quite interesting findings, I think, aren't they?
And it's happening. So if you want your latest sports news, you can just talk to your friendly machine and it will offer up the latest bulletin. Well, that's the world that we also are looking at being part of. You know, that's the reality of where we are.
So I have to say this, I do it now. I walk into the kitchen and I just say, Alexa, play Radio 4 or play Radio 5.
And it says back to him, Trevor, get to Walsall.
Oh, Trevor, you should be listening to
Jazz FM.
Does it tell you
Alexa,
what you should be listening to? Does it it doesn't curate?
No,
does
but
it?
if you say something like Alexa, play me Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now by The Smiths,
which is your morning tune.
She will say something like, here's a station I've found that you may like. And it's playing something like the Beach Boys. And you think, no, wake up, Alexa, you know. But maybe she'll learn.
That's helpful that Alexa is not quite that bright yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Dave, are we as radio engineers, are you in that world working with the Googles and the Amazons of this world to make that kind of voice activation work better?
Yeah, so the whole kind of concept of voice search, and Alexa is the best example of it right now, I guess, is a new space for most media companies. It's not just radio, and where we used to spend lots of time optimizing for Google searches and that kind of thing, there's now an awful lot of thinking going into how do we optimize for this new voice world. And it might be a massive fad, it might all go away in a year's time, a bit like 3D TV. Feels quite good, actually, the Alexa stuff, so it feels like it's probably going to hang around. And we're all going to need to learn how to, and it's the metadata conversation, everybody, to do the metadata so that when those search engines go and do that thing, when you ask for something, we can return the right content to you as a listener to get what you want. So, we're thinking about it big time.
What I really want is not just Alexa, play Radio 5 Live, but Alexa, what's the latest news on 5 Live? Can it do that? Yeah, can it find the most recent news bulletin and play me that?
So it in itself probably can't. We are capable of going, this was our latest news bulletin, and we can describe it and make it available for Alexa to find. But Alexa can't go and build that on its own. So we need to do some of that work in advance to help those services when people ask those different questions.
I think watch this space on it.
So what if I say, play me 5 Live Insured? Can she find that?
Well, I think what it needs, which will probably happen, is certain big companies to talk to people like the BBC, and then we see where we get to.
Good.
Is Alexa going to supersede the idea of curated radio?
So I think that's a slightly different space. Right. I don't think that Alexa is going to, or any of these search-driven engines, are going to start to build channels and content
just
curation on your behalf.
Right.
I think certainly one of the BBC's propositions in the last charter is that we want to start to make personalised content for you, and that might be a channel where we know your preferences of more of this and less of that. So through those voice searches, I imagine that when we've developed that stuff, that will be available through Alexa or whoever else. But I don't think Alexa per se is going to do that. Now, could be wrong, right? In 2 years' time, they've got an awful lot of very clever people doing stuff. They might do it all for us. I don't imagine they will, but they might.
Fascinating stuff to think about, isn't it? What have we been listening to then? This is my favourite bit of the monthly roundtable. Don't pick too many clips because I'm going to have to go and search for them this afternoon and stick them into the podcast. So let's start with Glow.
I heard the most amazing programme on Saturday night in the Archive Hour. And I
Radio 4.
Yeah, Radio 4. And I was so jealous that I didn't come up with the idea myself. I just thought, what a great idea. It was Gary Young, you know, the Guardian journalist, and Jonathan Friedland, another Guardian journalist, both Radio 4 broadcasters. And they were sharing their stories about when they were first exposed to anti-Semitism and racism.
And one of them being black and the other being Jewish.
Gary Young being black and Jonathan being Jewish. And they both shared that when they were both 10, their mothers introduced them to Roots, Jonathan Friedland, the Jew, and the Holocaust, Gary Young, the black guy. And so their experience of understanding slavery, anti-Semitism, the Holocaust came through these TV programmes when they were quite young. And what they then did was look at how TV and radio and the media have presented Jews and blacks since then. And so they had this whole sort of journey with Lenny Henry and Maureen Lipman and all these different characters talking about how Jews and blacks have been presented. So for somebody like me, you know, a Jew from North London, it was just such a good listen and so well crafted. I loved it. I simply loved it.
Let's have a clip.
I don't have a kind of precise moment at which the kind of this conversation would have started, but I feel like, particularly in British society, if you feel like an outsider, you look for other outsiders, and you pick up on whatever it is that would make them an outsider, and then you see whether there's any connection.
It was during one of those conversations that it emerged that a key moment for both of us in shaping our understanding of all this had come when we were quite young children, and it had come while watching television.
We must have watched it in either 79 or 80.
We're at my house, talking about it in my living room. Gary is telling me about the night he saw a TV drama, a miniseries, called Holocaust.
So my memory is really vivid. The style that I grew up in was one in which there was no bedtime. You fall asleep, you drop where you are. And so I was kind of crashed out on the living room floor. And my mum woke me up and she said, "You have to watch this." And I was like, wow. So slobbery mouth, a face full of carpet. And she said, and this has stuck with me because I wonder what she meant by this, "This is your story too."
It's astonishing how they cooperate,
which proves they don't deserve to live.
That's the Archive Hour on 4. Do you want another pick, Chloe?
Yes, I then... Can I just say, I've reconnected with Robert Elms on Radio London. I just think he's brilliant. I forgot how brilliant he was. And me as a Londoner, you know, Robert just is so optimistic about London. There's so much negativity around at the moment. Everybody's going, whereas Robert is so full of optimism and energy.
Hello, I'm Robert Elms, and I'd like to welcome you to my latest podcast. We're going to be looking back at 100 days, and even better, 100 nights of the Roxy Club, with its founders, Andrew Chazovsky and Susan Carrington. That's the legendary punk club, and a book about it. Alan Hughes, owner of the Whitechapel Bell Foundry, came in to talk about the foundry's history and hopefully its future as well, as it closes its premises after nearly 280 years. Also, Peter Waller came in, author and industrial archaeology expert, with his fascinating book, England's Maritime Heritage from the Air. This is aerial photographs of London's docks and ports as you've never seen them before. But up first, the one and only, and there really is only one, Ray Davies, who came in to talk about the Kinks and his latest album, Americana. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hi, Robert. Always a pleasure.
Well, the pleasure is entirely mine. I mean,
let's go to Dave next. Dave Walters.
So I was marvelling at the modern world we live in, Radio 2, most of last week, have been trailing a 30-year celebration documentary of Rain Town, the Deacon Blue album, which I think was going to be broadcast on Radio 2 on Monday or Tuesday night this week. But because it was a Radio Scotland programme, it was already in the iPlayer. So I'm in my kitchen, I've got it on my phone, I'm Bluetoothing it to my speakers. I am living the dream of listening to a programme before it's even been broadcast. It's here today. Was that Ian Rankin's show? It was the Ian Rankin programme. Yeah. And you go, really? 30 years? And you take yourself back because actually it feels still pretty fresh.
Let's have a clip of that.
The 80s were not a good time to be a drummer because at the recording studio, everyone wanted to use drum machines. Mm. And we went into that studio and Kenny McDonald and Bobby Patterson produced it. Bobby was the bass player in Love and Money at that time. And I remember him saying to Ricky, out of my earshot, but I actually heard it, but it's like, Doogie doesn't hit the drums loud enough to trigger the gates. We're going to have to use a drum machine. And I remember thinking, but that's actually okay. Music's all about playing loud and soft and dynamic and listening to each other. But we didn't know enough at that time. We were kind of like really shy of the studio, really scared of the studio, really scared of technology. So I was just like, okay, then we'll do it. And we recorded Dignity with a drum machine. And it just wasn't us. We're not Depeche Mode. We're not the Pet Shop Boys. We are a live band who play together in the studio. Mm-hmm. So the chance to go down to Ayr Studios, hire the big room there and record the album live as a band, all listening to each other, all playing together the way that we still do, it was hugely important, and I'm so glad we get the chance to go and do it again.
That's the Ian Rankin Deacon Blue programme, which, as you say, was on Radio Scotland and Radio 2.
Yes.
Another one, Dave.
I've mentioned it before, but Simon Mayo Confessions I totally love. And one of the reasons is that he talks all over the front and the back of the programme, and he plays the jingles and tell you the jingles' names and their cart numbers at the beginning of the podcast. It's a total geek thing, right? But if you don't mind a jingle, it's a great listen.
Hello and welcome. It's another Confessions podcast from your friends at BBC Radio 2. And we're going to start, just to prove that it is genuinely us, with a Radio 2 ident, which is called Strawberry Ramp, which I have to say, until a few moments ago, I'd never heard before. Let's enjoy it together. You can see what they're doing. Anyway, that's us. So what follows is an audio array of terrible tales, as normal, from the unbelievably sinful Radio 2 listener, all seeking forgiveness from the juggernauts of justice.
Simon Mayo's Confessions on Radio 2. Of course, he's really yours, isn't he, Jono? He's really a Five Live guy. He's just slumming it on two.
He does
his
best show of the week with us, doesn't he?
Yeah, of course.
As proved at the Podcast Awards.
Yeah, I was going to say
that. Wasn't
that
invited
weekly,
to.
That weekly podcast he does that you also broadcast.
That's
yeah.
The one.
Yeah. What have you got to tempt us then, Jono?
Would you think I would be a target audience for Heat Radio, Trevor?
No,
I wouldn't be. Because I'm not really into celebrity, and it's not just about being a boy or a girl. To be fair, I think it's tipped that way.
Sort of aimed at 25 to 35 women.
You seem to be looking at me, Trevor. Like, why would I know?
Yeah, I'm insulted that you're not looking at me.
Anyway, radio.
Emily Segal is the breakfast presenter. Bright, bubbly, energetic, makes every link count. I discovered her when judging one of these various awards things and thought, my goodness, you've got something about you. And I wish, this is a commercial radio thing that little bit does my head in, of when it's back-to-back tracks and you just want that amazing presenter to come in and give you a little extra 20 seconds. But every time she's got a celebrity with her, there's some clever little game or trick that she does to get something memorable that also therefore does well on the short-form digital. A real bright one to look out for.
Let's have a clip of Emily.
Robbie Williams, welcome to Heat Radio.
Hi, darling. How long have you been doing Heat Radio?
Less than a year.
Oh, well, congratulations. What were you doing before that? Were you in the radio business?
I was, and then I got the sack.
Oh, no, what for?
They didn't probably think I was that good, and then he gave me an opportunity.
Oh, right. Well, instantly think you're amazing, and your employers before Heat do not know what they're on about.
I've always wanted Robbie Williams to tell them that, so thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I'll send a letter.
It is such a pleasure to have you here. Like, where are you now? Are you LA? Are you London?
I'm both.
Yeah?
We are both. I love the sun. It does something to me.
Yep.
That's really pleasant, that makes my life enjoyable.
Another one from you, Jono.
a general observation about drive time radio. Good time for me to do a bit of flicking round. For me, it's the best presenters of lots of different stations are all on at once. Drive time's a real wealth of quality. So Simon Mayo on 2, Greg James, I think, is the best Radio 1 presenter on Radio 1. Ian Dale's my favourite LBC presenter. He's on then. Johnny Vaughan's doing his stuff. And I think it's the best talk sports show is the Adrian Durham, Darren Goff show. A fantastic wealth of stuff. There's a gap for a strong female presenter at drive time, is
well,
what I'm going to say.
Well, that is interesting, isn't it?
Because apart from Anna Foster co-presenting Drive, I can't hear one on any of these channels. It's so a hell of an opportunity.
Why wouldn't a Jane Garvey or a Fee Glover or a, I don't know, a
Victoria?
Or a Sheila Fogarty, where are they?
I don't know. Well, they're obviously all on in various different slots, but it's just that, I mean, that's my best time to relax and do some flicking round once I've left the office. And it's brilliant. And in a way, my two points here. One is drive time radio is mightily strong. It's not just about breakfast. But the second one is, if you're flicking around, it's all male voices of similar ages in there. It's quite interesting how there might be an opportunity.
I wanted to talk about something that is entirely women, which is the Jane Garvey Fee Glover podcast, which I know you've been listening to, Gloria. Don't grimace.
Oh,
come a little nearer to this yellow thing. It's called a microphone.
This is unfair because Jane and Fee are friends, and I love it because Jane.
No, you don't.
Let me finish. I love it because Jane and Fee are friends of mine, and so it's like me eavesdropping on their conversation, and they're very funny together. The point is, though, they only talk about BBC programmes. And I would like their take, because they're funny, I would like their take outside the BBC. I'd like them to do a bit more work on this. It's a great opportunity to showcase both of them together, because they are very funny together. I just think it's a bit too in, you know, and
a bit
because
smug.
It's, I don't know if smug's the right word, because they are both. They are. You're all looking at me. I don't think.
Well, we just want you to say what you said before.
You just said it was smug, Trevor.
I didn't say.
No, that was a question, John.
Oh, was it?
No,
I didn't see the question bar there.
I never said they were smug. I said I thought they were very in.
Let's have a clip.
Insular.
So there was one week where he was doing how to survive long-haul plane trips, gout and eating too much salt. It was just Steve Wright's Easter holidays went a bit wrong.
Gout's a very serious issue.
It's very serious.
It's a midlife blight.
Yep, I've had it.
Oh, have you? Oh, sorry.
Treading on. I've
no idea.
Well, literally, don't tread on my toes.
Don't you have to take medication every day for the rest of your life, do you?
No, because it wasn't that serious. I just had one toe that got a bit crunchy. Should we leave it at that?
Sex symbol, Fee Glover, and her gout.
Garvey and her piles. Come on.
She also had, this morning, I mean, this is tales from my life, seriously. I went to put my bra on this morning, and a sultana fell out of it. And I had that genuine human quandary. Shall I eat it? How long has that been in there? I didn't eat it, Fee.
Okay.
It's all right.
Okay.
I should have gone on Sugar Free Farms.
You should have, because if you're stashing soft fruits in your underwear... Something in your life has gone a little bit awry.
There's Fee and Jane. I did see Jane, as you did, earlier today, and she said she wants to come on this podcast. So I'll get her to come on and talk about you.
And then she can talk about my Uzbek cooking podcast that I'm going to be
doing.
Upload
Radio. Who's got a show on Upload Radio? Oh, only me. Entirely untroubled by listeners. I wanted to talk about Nick Robinson's Political Thinking, which is a podcast which is now on air on Radio 4 on a Saturday morning. Anyway, Nick Robinson is brilliant,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And he has managed to, at a time when it's very difficult to keep up the impartiality and everything, and you have to because it's the law and it's the general elections going on, he's managing to strip away some of the stuff. And if you like, he's kind of letting us in with some backstage, behind the scenes talk that goes on in newsrooms about, well, how are we going to interview Theresa May, or how can we find a different spin on do the Greens have a role, or what's going on with UKIP or something? And he's interviewing people who are being dispassionate about something that they're actually passionate about, and he's doing it really well. And here's a clip.
when you're doing an interview, you're thinking, how can I get the person talking to me to reveal more of the truth than maybe they want to? You can't force them to say what they're totally unwilling to say, but you want them to reveal it. I tried to do it partly by teasing her, the famous Mrs. Merton question. Everyone remembers Mrs. Merton, the chat show host, asking the very glamorous model who married the rather diminutive comedian Paul Daniels, what first attracted you to the millionaire Paul Daniels? And it instantly came into my mind that I should say, this, doesn't it? Which is, what is it about the recent 20% opinion poll that first attracted you to the idea of a general election?
Look, I've taken this decision and I took it reluctantly. I've thought about it, as I said yesterday when I was...
The other thought that came into my mind was the Prime Minister's description of herself as a vicar's daughter.
I grew up the daughter of a local vicar and the granddaughter of a regimental sergeant major. Public service has been a part of who I am.
And I knew it was significant to her because she used it in her opening pitch when she ran for the Tory leadership last year, describing herself as a vicar's daughter who had the idea of public service imbued in her, who believed in getting on with the job, who didn't believe in playing games, as she put it. And I instantly thought, when I heard her announcement, this announcement, for many people, will seem to contradict that. It will look like political game playing, rather than playing it straight and playing it in the national interest, so that it would be worth asking her about that.
Look, Nick, every election has a risk. No politician wants to go into an election just for the sake of having an election. I've taken this decision because I genuinely believe it is in the national interest. You described me earlier as somebody who likes to sort of roll up my sleeves and get on with the job. I do, but I also want to take the right decisions and the right decisions for the UK.
I was really struck when she said every election has a risk, because Theresa May, more than almost any other politician, doesn't ad-lib. When she comes into a studio, she knows what she wants to say. She's a difficult person to interview because she's quite hard to get off the prepared lines to take. A little bit like, I guess, Gordon Brown used to be. And that struck me as a phrase she'd probably not come to say. And it seemed to me to reveal a little inner chink of doubt.
So there's Nick Robinson and political thinking. I think that's about it, unless there is, as they say on Fighting Talk, any other business. Glo.
I would just like to say that I have huge admiration for people who do daily programmes. You know, I was listening to people like Jeremy Vine and Stephen Nolan and Dotton and people who are on air for a long time and who have to keep that energy going and keep interacting with the audience. And I think that often we can be too critical and not celebratory enough about these great broadcasters. And I know that's not the zeitgeist, and we tend to be, you know, we're meant to be critical because we want to get better. But also I just want to celebrate
credit.
These people.
Well said, Gloria.
Because I just think, you know, they do this every day, you know, they have to get up and listen to some drivel sometimes from the public. You think, how do you do it every day? So I just
you
want
were going so well.
Respect.
Dave, anything
people.
Else you want to add?
We've all conducted this interview without wearing headphones, apart from Trevor, and it pains me.
Well, I thought you sounded rather good. Jonah?
I enjoyed it, Trevor. I think you're the king of podcasts, and I would expect to see more of your programmes in the podcast charts in the year ahead.
It's lovely to have you all. Gloria, Jono, Dave, thank you very much for joining us on the Radio Today programme Roundtable. We'll have another one in a month's time. And now, here is the news, read by a man you can occasionally hear on Jono's own station, 5 Live. It's Stuart Clarkson.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. And here are the top stories from radiotoday.co.uk over the last 7 days. Radio Centre is calling on the government to bring in changes to commercial radio regulation as soon as possible. The trade body agreed with the DCMS proposals in the recent consultation that suggested removing many of the format and localness restrictions that are currently in place. Radio Centre also wants previously unviable or uneconomic FM licences that were handed back to the regulator to be re-advertised. Celador Radio has bought another licence this week, taking over Jack FM Berkshire in Reading. The group now owns 26 stations around the south and east of England, most of them using the Sam FM and the Breeze brand names. The Breeze is already on air in nearby Basingstoke, Andover and Newbury. Share Radio has gone online only after leaving the SDL Second National DAB multiplex. The station says it'll now be able to build a more listener-centric commercial model. The station's been on digital radio for the last 2.5 years, initially just in London. LBC has secured a half-hour programme with the Prime Minister. Theresa May will be on the global station this week to answer questions from listeners. It's the first LBC Leaders Live show of the election campaign, hosted by Nick Ferrari on Thursday night. Chris Moyles has a new producer. James Robinson is moving over to Radio X from Heart. He replaces Dave Masterman, who's left Global for Bauer's Absolute Radio. Some former staff at Team Rock Radio have launched a fundraising campaign this week to pay for a new rock metal radio station. Primordial Radio is looking for £130,000, and nearly £40,000 was pledged in the first 24 hours. And the community radio station Swindon 105.5 has been found in breach of the Ofcom broadcast code this week for playing a song with the F word in. The Enrique Iglesias track went out at 7:25 on a Saturday evening. And there's more radio news updated daily as it happens at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stuart. David Lloyd after this.
Visual radio, smarter and cheaper. Virtual Director from Broadcast Bionics combines your social media, messaging, photos, audio and videos with intelligent camera control and automated graphics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
As we lead up to the 2017 election and heed the warnings and blogs on impartiality, let's remember this week 9 years ago and James Whale on TalkSport.
Well, it has to be...
Don't, you're not allowed to say.
Say what?
Who you should vote for.
What was I... How do you know what I was going to say?
Well, I know what you're going to say.
Boris Johnson. What?
Did you say something?
What? I didn't say anything.
Boris Johnson. Did you...
Well, no, I didn't say anything. I'm not allowed to say who to vote for in the London mayoral elections. It's wrong.
Well, no, of course not.
Boris Johnson. Well, I mean, I hear that Gordon Brown
has...
Can you
hear something on the line?
Boris Johnson. No, not a thing, no. I hear that Gordon Brown is getting everybody to vote for Ken Livingstone.
Yeah, but he's not on the radio.
There was a story, because Gordon Brown had come out and said he was going to support... No, it was just a news story, and I'm just being silly and flippant and saying, well, we need somebody as big as Gordon Brown to support Boris, don't we? Who could that be? Ah, oh, it must be me. And my then producer, Ash, who still works with me, who can't say that on the air, man, or that sort of thing. And it was, you know, and we all made mistakes, you know.
James Whale, who left TalkSport this week in 2008 after references to Boris Johnson's mayoral election. This week is obviously the one to do commercial radio deals. 19 years ago, Capital announced it had acquired Dragon in Cardiff for £18.25 million. 12 years ago, Chrysalis, then the third biggest radio group, acquired Century 106 from GCAP. And this week last year, Bauer took control of the former Orion Media stations in the Midlands. Is that a year ago? And I'm still out of work, but very busy. And this week, 3 years ago, the Heart brand expanded to the stations formerly owned by Guardian Media.
Hi, this is Toby Ansis. I'll be here every weekday morning on Heart, your new radio station. Join me from 10 for more music variety and your chance to win £100,000 with our big money game, Who's on Heart?
More Heart brand conversions with the typical focus and efficiency of global radio. This week in 2014, its Heart brand grew to 9.2 million listeners. Brand changes are nothing new, though, and those people who say, why can't we just go back to the way it was in the olden days, probably forget that pirate stations brought us playlists and sponsored programming, and this week in 64, a brand change.
On 201 metres, this is Radio Atlanta. For brighter broadcasting, the time is 6 o'clock. Time for all systems go.
Aaron Hume with the music queen of the seven seas. This is the good ship, Radio Atlanta.
Radio Atlanta, which came on air this week in 1964 from the ship the MV Mi Amigo with Brighter Broadcasting. There's a strapline idea for you. It was the second UK pirate merging after just 3 months with its predecessor Caroline. 1931 now. And what's this?
This is the national programme. In your garden. And here's Mr. Middleton.
Good evening. Well, how do you like this for a bit of spring weather? Perhaps I shall get rid of my winter cold if we get a month or two of this. It's wonderful what a difference a day or two can make, isn't it, in the garden. I had a look at Wisley last night, or yesterday evening. Wisley Gardens, and it looks just as though someone had been round there with a box of paints.
The first ever gardening programme this week, 86 years ago, and the chap who hosted it, who ad-libbed, which was very rare in those days, has a wrought iron gate in his memory at the BBC Written Archive Centre in Caversham. Gardening programmes, of course, now are commonplace on BBC local radio, particularly including Nottingham.
A big pot or a bucket, a pot if you can, with some nice compost, and then stand it somewhere where the sun is not going to shine. Yeah, so
happy 65th birthday this week to the man loved by just about every jingle anorak, John Wolfert. John established Jam in Dallas, said to be one of the most successful jingle companies ever, with his work heard for a generation on so many British stations. Happy birthday, John Wolfert. So, with Johnny Walker announcing he was quitting Radio 1 after being told he must pretend to like the Bay City Rollers 41 years ago. And London's famous 2LO launching 95 years ago from the 7th floor of Marconi House on the Strand.
This is 2LO, the London station of the British Broadcasting Company calling.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. Well, that's it for this week, with thanks to our excellent panel, to Stuart Clarkson and David Lloyd, and of course you for listening. It's been a TDC production, and we'll have more next week. Cheers.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.